Hello, this is Down the Back of the Seats. I'm Ellen, cinema manager at Campbelltown Picture House.
And I'm Alistair, film and theatre maker based on the island of Mull.
And Alistair, what is this podcast about?
This podcast is about pressing record at the right time and not forgetting to do so, like the last time we tried to record this episode. It also explores what happens when public spaces and the public meet, what's left behind, what's been found that's unexpected, what stories are there to tell. It's tales from behind the scenes at the cinema, theatre, concert hall, wherever people meet, linger, and leave things or bits.
Yes, so a peep behind the curtain. Alistair and I recorded a podcast about 2 hours ago. Well, I say Alistair and I recorded a podcast. I recorded my side of the podcast. We had the most insightful, witty, interesting conversation.
I think it was our best episode yet.
It was the best. It's the lost episode. So are you recording, Alistair Satchell?
We're 1 minute and 50 seconds into the recording. Yes, I am. Thank you. I do apologise wholeheartedly.
It's okay. I've got a couple of questions for you from Dave Allen, not that one.
Hi, Dave.
So our first one is regards to falling asleep in the cinema. He was asking what films we have fallen asleep to, but I think more specifically what films have other people fallen asleep to and I've had to deal with or indeed yourself had to deal with from an audience. Yeah. So first up, what films? You're a notorious snoozer. To say your reputation
anywhere. Ridiculous.
And in fact, I'm pretty sure you've slept in Screen 2, but not during a film. I'm sure you were doing a couple of workshops and you had a nap in between.
Yeah, I went over to the bit where no one ever steps, down by the screen, and I put my bag down, my jacket over it, nice big comfy bag, a bag jacket, and I had a couple of hours. It was great. It's lovely and dark in there. It's great. Yeah.
Many of people have slept in Screen 2. We do have a lovely member of the audience who comes every Wednesday to see just whatever's on, and as soon as the lights go down, he's asleep. And he doesn't wake up when the lights come up. So a regular Wednesday task for the staff is to go into whichever screen this particular person is in and wake him up and bring him out. And we get each week somebody who's not used to that will come up and say, I was just in Screen 2 and I think somebody is, I hope, asleep. So that's nice. But you, what have you slept through?
I have slept through. At Campbelltown Picture House, I have slept through The Man in the White Suit, which I love. Alexander McKendrick, one of my favourite directors. But I'd travelled quite a long time to get to Campbelltown that morning. I was quite tired. It was a nice, warm cinema. It was dark. The seat was very comfy. And the 1950s story just didn't hold me for long enough. And I was away. Bye-bye. Thank you. Good night. The one I felt most... Well, there's two I felt most guilty about. And the first one is... a rarity to see the amazing, one of my all-time favourite films, 2001 on 70mm, and it was extraordinary, and then I was asleep. It was quite ridiculous, but I did wake up and saw the majority of it. It was maybe only 20 minutes out, but it was quite something. But the worst one I've ever done was last year in the Dark Knights Festival, both in Estonia and Tallinn, and I went to the premiere of a film in a packed out cinema, few seats left, and it was a British film, and it was two English filmmakers, and it's a film about a farmer and it's documentary basically, footage, but with a drama over the top on the sound. And it's a son and daughter talking about what are we going to do with our father in phone messages back and forth. And I was gone within 15 minutes. It was just, it did not hold me. And it was a really cynical, I thought it was a cynical film. It was just like, let's see what we can do. And it just didn't connect. The two things didn't connect at all. The sound and the vision were just so unrelated. It just pulled my brain in two different directions. And the happy middle ground was Land of Nod. So, so I was asleep for that. And the horrible thing is that when I fell asleep, there was someone beside me, like a couple of seats down. When I woke up, there was no one there. I don't know if I'd been snoring. And anyway, oh, just horrid. But the worst thing was that, you know, the filmmakers were in the audience with us. And I had to run out before the end of at the end of the film, as they were standing to get up and give their Q&A. I was like, right, thank you, bye-bye. Anyway, I went back into the bar in the hotel, and someone else who'd recommended the film or said, you know, it's a problematic film to me. I said, yeah, I was just gone. And I think it was Mike Nichols, I could be wrong, but I think it was Mike Nichols that was there, standing beside my friend. And Mike Nichols directed Four Weddings and a Funeral and Notting Hill, I think, was both two of his, and he's done lots of major stuff. Pretty sure it was him. He told me off. So I feel like such a dick. But yeah, it was, you know, there's people did put effort into making that film, but it was a cynical, hey, we're going to make a movie kind of movie, and it was just, no, it's not, it's, I don't know, I don't, I, everything's got to have heart and soul, and that was rubbish. It's Stalker. I fell asleep in Stalker as well, which is one of my favourite movies, but never mind, that's another story.
Yeah, oh dear, it is awful when you feel yourself going.
Do you ever do it at all? Do you ever pass away?
Yeah, I think not so much anymore, because I tend to watch films in the morning before the cinema opens now. But I've slept through, Mary's going to hate this, I've slept through quite a lot of Lord of the Rings and Hobbits.
Haven't we all slept
through various Hobbits.
They show them on the New Zealand flights, specifically so you feel comfortable enough to do that. Like,
there's a soporific effect of all that walking.
Exactly.
I've really struggled in theatres sometimes if I'm absolutely exhausted. And it's so, falling asleep in the theatre is horrendous.
Someone live in front of you. Yes, I've been on stage where someone was doing that. Probably one of Scotland's more respected playwrights. He was a friend, very significant in the 1980s and 90s. And they were sat in the front row, and they were sort of nodding off very gently and had the eye out. And beside them was a girl sitting with an open mouth eating yogurt. So... So, you know, be doing this sensitive piece in all years. And it was, warm dark rooms. That's all I'll say. Warm dark rooms.
Yeah, it's an impossible situation. Dave's next question is about dual purpose cinemas, which we touched on a little bit with Kyle from the Broadway Prestwick, which spent some of its life as a squash court.
Yeah,
which isn't really, I don't think that's really what Dave is asking, because that's a cinema that's turned into a squash, or repurposed as squash courts, and now is being repurposed back into a cinema again. Yeah. I think we're looking for cinemas who...
crematorium come cinema.
Yeah, alongside each other. You know, you watch a film and then...
You keep warm from the crematorium, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's not the bad heating. The cost of heating at the
swimming
moment.
Swimming pools and crematoriums, actually, crematoria go together very well. It's a strange one, but it's been done.
Really? Because of the heating?
Totally. And also... I think so. Swimming pools and tomato farms as well, like growing tomatoes in big greenhouses, like huge ones, and the water cycling going through all that. Yeah.
I thought you were going to talk compost.
Ooh, well, I've always got time to talk about compost.
No, I don't think so.
Hot compost.
Yeah. So bingo halls and cinemas, of course, is the main one, the one that springs to mind first, because an awful lot of cinemas in the 70s and 80s had dual purpose as bingo halls, Campbelltown included, and lots of the old cinemas that I used to work for have spent a period of time doing bingo. My previous cinema, the Phoenix Picture House in Oxford, was a porn cinema for a little while. It's still a cinema, but it was repurposed as a specific pornographic picture house.
That's a which, lot of bleach.
Yeah, well, it got, do you know what? It got them through. I'm not anti this sort of thing. In the US, I found a few that had been
Completon
converted.
Porno house.
If, do you know what? Needs must. Cost of living. Churches. Yeah. There's a few cinemas in, quite a few cinemas in America, particularly where cinemas have been converted into churches or vice versa. But of course, again, that's not dual use bookshops and things like that. But yeah, the most ubiquitous dual purpose that I can think of is cinema and bingo, or cinema and theatre, of course, but you know, similar sort of things. So yeah, if anyone comes up with any or knows of any from their local cinema, that'd I'd be really, cool. really interested to hear that. Yeah.
I mean, when you're away at film festivals very often, and actually throughout Argyll, and anywhere where you've got rural kind of cinema provision, you're always looking at village halls and things like that. But at film festivals, you know, occasionally you get wonderful screenings in specific places, and you know, like barns and things like that, and you sit in a hay bale and watch a film. It's lovely. I'm really, really keen to try and show Jaws in the swimming pool in Dunoon. I know I've said this several times, but I really think that would be a fantastic thing to do. Imagine being all on Lilo's watching Jaws. It would just be
Done. Yeah, it's done quite regularly. It was done in Oxford while I was there.
Oh, and, nice. Yeah.
I get the impression with that the idea of it is much better than the actual you end up on a Lilo in the dark, cold.
Yeah.
I've
always wanted to do a drive-in as well, because drive-in technology should be easy enough to do with kind of like near-field broadcasting devices and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I think it'd be that would be lovely to, you know, just, I've never been to a drive-in and I'd love to go.
Do they do the sound through the radio still?
That's what you would do, yeah. You'd use a small broadcaster. You might need a license for the broadcast thing, but there are ways of boosting a signal. Basically, you take one of those MP3 plug-in devices you used to have for when your car radio, and you just wrap it. You open it up and wrap it in copper and plug it into a car battery or something like that. No, broadcast. So, but it's a really nice. I like the idea of that a lot. But then I would be asleep within minutes doing me.
Well, exactly. You'd miss the whole thing. You went back to one of your favourite cinemas this week, did you not?
I was very lucky to go and see Civil War in Dunoon, at the Studio Cinema in Dunoon, and Studio A, the big studio there. It was fantastic to go back after all this time and see how. Yeah, I mean, I try and go whenever I'm in Dunoon, but the refurbishment looks fantastic. It's just so nicely done, and it's very comfortable, and the sound is fantastic in there. And it was really, really good. And Civil War, I thought. I'm a big fan of Alex Garland, the filmmaker who wrote and directed that film. So it was very interesting to see that fresh on the big screen. I think it's a film I would recommend, but if people are in the mood for a film that looks very much at current things, very much worthwhile going to see. You've seen it as well, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I also watched it. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Yeah, I liked it.
It's fine.
Yeah. That's good. I really liked it. Thought it was great.
I'm pleased to hear that.
And extremely worryingly close to. This is the problem with dystopian films now, is that they're just, it's just a step away.
I was referring to it as a documentary and waiting. That's, you know, it's.
Yeah. It's just a tiny little domino. Just knock that.
Yeah,
flick that first
another weekend like the last one, and away we go. What did you like about it? Tell me what do you think the film's strengths were?
I liked. I'll give a little rundown. We're definitely going to talk about spoilers, but it's not really the sort of film that you need to avoid. Any particular plots? We won't say what happens right at the end, but it's not a There's no twists or turns or anything like that. So the
No.
That annoys me when people review films and they say, I'm not going to reveal what happens in the twist. But by revealing that there is a twist, you've already started me, started my little brain thinking about it. Anyway, there's not a twist.
But American Fiction, sorry. Yep.
Yeah, we did that with American Fiction for sure. Anyway, so it is set in America, modern times. Kirsten Dunst plays a war photographer. And it's a road movie, basically. Her and some other people have to get across the country in order to do a thing. And the film is them getting across the country. And it's great. And yes, one of the things that I liked about it, I thought she was superb. She looked like a war photographer, which, again, is one of my huge pet peeves in dystopian or apocalyptic films, is where the women just look beautiful and and don't have their hair tied. They're running around with high heels on and they don't have their hair tied up and they're wearing impractical clothing. Irritating. She's none of this. She's got a good bra on. Her hair's back. She looks like she hasn't slept for 3 weeks from when this thing started.
And she holds her camera so well. I heard her saying in an interview, the minute she knew she got the role, she got a hold of a camera and just didn't let go of it until she started filming, so that she felt completely at ease with this camera when she was shooting, which I thought was nice. That's a nice detail.
That is a nice detail, and that's the sort of method style acting that I like.
Yeah, that's physical
holding
memory.
Yeah, physical learning to hold him. Yeah, so I liked it very much. Now the politics. So one of the things that they've done with this film very, very deliberately is not reveal or not give any indication, particular indication, who is who. So there are two sides fighting each other. There are
Liberals and the fascists, presumably. Yeah.
Well, we can presume the liberals and the fascists, but they don't explicitly tell you who's who. So on one side there is the Texas-California alliance. So you can't figure out what's going on there. There's no colors, you know. There's no red or blue. All the uniforms are the same. Alistair, I thought it was, despite all that, I thought it was quite clear that the president was a fascist and
I mean, it's Nick Offerman. It's one of his best roles. He's very, very good in it. And you only see him.
Nick Offerman plays the president.
Three minutes of screen time in total, and he's excellent. I think it's safe to say it starts off with him rehearsing a speech before he does a live broadcast, and it's how he tones that up, and that's basically how we get into the film as well. It's like we're seduced into the film by Nick Offerman's performance. We see the vulnerability of the man, and then we see the performance, the performative role of politics. And I think that's what this film is so much about, is that lack of care, that performative edge of politics. That's, you know, politics without consequence. I will create this world, and it doesn't matter. It's never going to affect me. And I think that's a massive part of it. Before I go off.
That's fine. Do you know what? You just reminded me that I actually missed the first minute or two, which sounds like it should be impossible when you just press play whenever you want to start the film.
It's quite far away.
No, but I got there in plenty of time. But then I remembered that there was probably going to be quite a lot of gunshot and loud incendiaries in this film. And I had the dog with me, so I ran upstairs to turn the volume right down. And I had the subtitles on anyway, because I watch all my films with subtitles. But yes, I missed that little vignette at the beginning of Nick Offerman making a speech, and I just got his actual speech.
Oh, okay.
That's an interesting part.
But I liked I liked how I didn't choose a side. I liked that it left enough space for us to make it up for ourselves.
Yes, I did too, but I also found it a little bit frustrating that but I think that's just because I wanted to be told that I was very good and I'd figured out the right thing. Yeah. I think I wanted I was going to say I think I wanted the president them to be the baddies and us to be the goodies, but there are very much no baddies and goodies in this film.
That's exactly the point of the film, and I think the one key scene which deals with this is the scene, and this is not a spoiler because his name's in the credits and he was seen at the premiere. Jesse Plemons is in it, who is Kirsten Dunst's husband in real life, and his scene kind of every film, every theatre play, every novel always has a tell. It's like, you know, they talk about in card playing or game, jeu de cartes, how do you say it in English? How is it in English? Cards, when you play cards. There's always a tell when someone is playing a card that, you know, you can say, ah, yeah, I know what you're at. Well, this is the tell of this film is this scene where Jesse Plemons plays an arbiter of life and death. And he has a gun and he can choose who lives or dies by a series of simple questions. Who are you? Where are you from? And it's so fantastically tense and so fantastically well played. Plemons just does it with such ease. It's amazing. It's a kind of actor's dream, really, to play these kind of roles, because everything's set up. You know, it's when we recorded this episode earlier on, when I forgot to press record, we talked about Chekhov's gun, the literary device that the playwright Anton Chekhov, a great Russian writer, used to introduce a gun in Act 1. And then you see it play out in Act 3 that, you know, the gun will be used. Well, essentially, that's what we've got in this, is that we've got Chekhov's gun at the start of the scene, because there's Jesse Plemons with his gun. And it's just waiting for the tension for it to kind of to be used. And one of the things I talk a lot about when I'm doing with work is a notion of Joe, Hat, and Cue. Have I mentioned this in this podcast before at all, Ellen? Do you remember this?
I don't mention it again. I don't remember.
So, Joe, Hat, and Cue are Japanese forms of storytelling within no theatre. And it's actually implicit in all kind of storytelling. And it's just a really interesting way to break things down so we kind of understand the mechanics of how things work. In English, we say beginning, middle, and end. I feel those are very final. It's not really, you know, it's not ideal. Whereas in Japanese, Joha and Kyu translates to beginning, continuation, and conclusion. So if you look at a film or a play, a film has a beginning, a continuation, a conclusion. Very obvious. But if you look at an act structure within that, it's, you know, it has a Joe and a Q, a beginning, a continuation, a conclusion. If you look at a scene, it has a Joe and a Q. If you look at the action of an actor stroking their face, that has a Joe and a Q. If you look at an actor breathing or blinking, each of those moments has a Joe, and a Q. This kind of threefold structure which runs under everything and kind of compels the action along. And that scene with Jesse Plemons is very much exactly that at play. It's in essence, it's the whole film, but just in one little scene. And it's absolutely remarkable. The tiny movements he does, you know, just scratching his nose or whatever, just to make him seem like a little bit more normal. And the power that he has in the context of which he has it, it's really very special. But that's me talking about a male actor. The real star of this film is Kirsten Dunst. I thought she was just fantastic. She's one of my favourite actors anyway. I think she's someone who lives with depression and has dealt with depression, and you can always see that in her eyes, I feel. The film Melancholia by Lars von Trier was a very, very unpleasant film. She is absolutely remarkable in that, and you can just see the weight of sadness behind her eyes. And I think it's still there within, you can see bits of it within the performance. And I was listening to her talk about her approach to acting in this film very briefly, and she sort of gave something away which she didn't mean to give away. She said, yeah, I sort of did it in a dream state. And I thought that was fascinating, that she has this kind of like, this sort of, it's almost like playing in a dream, because it's not, it's hyper real, which I thought was very interesting. And the other thing I was going to say as well about Alex Garland, I mean, the sound is the thing I wanted to say about this film. I love the use of silence in this film so much. It's really, really impressive. It's such an intelligently made sound design. The storytelling is brilliant. It's basically vignettes. It's a classic road movie, and you don't really have to worry too much about the narrative units kind of linking up together. It's just, we know that we've got to go to that bit. You know, they've got X miles to get to the target. And there are lots of things that have happened in between, but we're just vignetting. We're seeing these moments when they happen. And I love that with that kind of storytelling, that it invites you in and you just follow it. Garland's previous film, a couple of films back, it was Annihilation, which is based on the Southern Cross trilogy of books, the first of those. And, oh man, I think that's my favourite of Alex Garland's films. I absolutely love it. There's a dance sequence at the end that is just so good. And it's a dance sequence that's not overtly a dance sequence. It's absolutely incredible. Again, Natalie Portman, a very strong female lead in that. She's amazing in that film. But what Garland did when he adapted that film, sorry if I've been ranting for too long, what Garland did when he adapted that film was he read the book. I think he thought, yeah, I'd like to make that into a film. He read it again, and then he put it away. And he just referred to his memory and pictures that were in his mind to make the film. And I love that with a storytelling, that approach that he has. It's a sort of subliminal, organically flowing form of storytelling. Doesn't work for every filmmaker. That takes a lot of arrogance to do that as well. But he is a proper master of storycraft. I love that. I thought that was really good. So yeah, I'd say if you get a chance to see Civil War, I recommend it most heartily.
I also recommend it most heartily.
The other thing as well, music in this film is really interesting. It's Ben Salisbury and Jeff Barrow who do the music for a lot of Alex Garland stuff, and I love their work so much. The soundtrack to Devs is awesome, the soundtrack to Ex Machina, and of course Drock, the soundtrack that wasn't used for Alex Garland's Judge Dredd movie. Really, really good.
Cool. There was one thing that I really, really found bafflingly bad.
The Naked Cabaret?
Yeah, well, no. There was one...
in the war zone.
Now, you do know about this because we've been trying not to speak about Civil War throughout the week. It's just... it's impossible. It was impossible not to. there was an actor in there who I was actually confused by their performance because it struck me as so bad that I thought it must have been some sort of deliberate. They must have been directed to do it in that way. But having spoken to you about it, we've sort of decided that they were just bad, which I found normally if there's a bad actor in something. And it's a very small part, you know, sort of 7 or 8 lines maximum. And normally if there's a bad actor in something, or indeed a particularly good actor in something, it doesn't really matter because you're sort of, you can kind of disregard it.
Yeah.
But for this film, I was gripped throughout and very tense throughout. And you've spoken about the music then, the silences, and that's what really sort of keeps you going. Because if there's a lot of noise and a lot of noise, and then you'll suddenly just drop into silence and fear. And then, so you're constantly in a sort of state of tension and anxiety. And that was completely undermined by just a extreme, weirdly bad actor in it. And I'm not going to say who it is or try and sort of hint at who it is, because I'd really like people to tell me whether they have the same experience. And I'm sorry if now people are watching out, waiting for the bad actor.
That's the shaker.
That's the bad one. Yeah. But it was, yes, it was a very odd and more annoying experience than normal when there's somebody that's a bad actor in it.
They have, this actor has is a choreographer by trade, I think it's safe to say, and they're a fantastic mover. They really move in a very interesting way.
Oh, I'm sure they're wonderful.
But in terms of their casting as an actor, they've been in a few things, and they've always been cast as an android or an alien, so that their performance doesn't really, you know, it's allowed to be a bit clunky and off and weird. And I don't think they're there yet as a performer at all in terms of acting and bringing a character to life. I think they're just someone who speaks words whilst standing still.
Yeah, Which is more than I can do, so I'm not knocking
bollocks.
It.
You'd be a very fine actor. None of that.
Absolutely so. Not. But yeah, so it was. Yes, that was a sort of odd experience.
Yeah. I think Garland's making one more movie, and then that's him retiring. Very bold choice. Yeah, I liked The Beach a lot as a book when I was in my early 20s when I read that. I thought that was great. And I really didn't like The Tesseract, his book he wrote after that. I thought that was absolute mince. So be interesting. Oh, and he's back as well with, I think he's involved in the 28 Days trilogy that's coming. Films that I've never been able to get into at all. The zombie movies set in London. And
oh, I quite like them.
What is it you like about them?
I can't remember. I only seen them once.
Okay, they're quite good.
Thought they were all right.
Yeah, I didn't take to them, but so yes, we shall meet again.
Yes, I think so. Shall we? I think that's probably plenty from us. We've said it all twice now, so
three and a half times, 2.5 times. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, Alistair, we shall wind down. As always, but particularly for what we've spoken about today, we would really love to hear what you have to say. We are on downthebackoftheseats@gmail.com or on Instagram and Facebook, Down the Back of the Seats. So that's Dual Purpose Cinemas and who you thought the bad actor was in Civil War. I don't want that to be a thing. But I'd really be interested in what other people have to say about Civil War, because I think it will divide.
Yeah, I think we'll love to hear what people have to say about Civil War. Thank you all for listening. It's really a nice thing to do. So thanks for listening, and yeah, hopefully catch you at some point, and maybe even see you one day for a live show somewhere.
You keep teasing this, and I keep cutting out when you say it because I don't want to do it.
You're gonna have to. No, of course, you don't have to. Cheer about.
Goodbye. Goodbye.